Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. It is October the 28th. The clock is ticking. We're about a week and a half from Election Day. An estimated 20 million Americans have already cast their vote. I wonder how many might be regretting what they voted for or how they voted or who they voted for. We have breaking news. Apparently, the FBI is reopening its email investigation of Hillary Clinton. I'll share my thoughts with you, and then we'll get on to a couple of the articles that I wrote for Front Page Magazine this past week. But those of you familiar with me know that this program is primarily focused on the impact of immigration, on national security, on public safety, on the well-being of America, the well-being of Americans, and it has nothing to do with race, nothing to do with religion. Has everything to do with upholding our laws, laws that are fundamental, laws that were enacted to protect this great nation and our citizens, irrespective of such superficial issues as race, religion, ethnicity. The laws are colorblind, simply stated. And there are those out there who would make you believe otherwise. And this program is about dispelling those insidious myths and providing the insight that the mainstream media refuses to provide. So I thank you for joining me. If you're familiar with me, you're probably familiar with the websites where my work appears. If you're new to the program, welcome on board. My own personal website is michaelcutler.net, one word, C-U-T-L-E-R, michaelcutler, one word, .net. I also, for years, have been affiliated with, Californians for Population Stabilization. Their website, capsweb.org. I have been doing a ton of writing of late for a wonderful organization, the David Horowitz Freedom Center. They sponsor Front Page Magazine. I do a lot of writing for them, two articles this week alone for Front Page Magazine. I also write for The Social Contract, a quarterly publication, and I'm happy to be working with them, have been working with them for many years. And occasionally my articles pop up at other places or my interviews, whether it's Life Zed or Progressives for Immigration Reform and so forth. But the place where you are most likely to find the greatest amount of articles that I write is clearly over at Front Page Magazine. So visit those websites. I hope you find them interesting. Or just go to my website, michaelcutler.net, because everything I write makes its way over to my own website appropriately enough. You know, so many issues are at stake with this election. What's amazing to me is how many people have been distracted, of course, with the aiding and abetting of Hillary Clinton and her partner, her running mate, partner in crime. Goodness gracious. But this nonsense about all these women coming out of the woodwork making the claims against Donald Trump, I tend not to believe them. Maybe some are telling the truth. I have no idea. But it's old, stale news at worst. And the best case scenario is just a bunch of bunk. It's amazing how people forgot that these things supposedly happened. And, a decade, 11, 12 years later, they come out of the woodwork and say, oh, by the way, guess what happened to me? A funny thing happened to me at a party. Crazy. America is at crossroads. We are under the threat of terrorism on a daily basis. We have never had more heroin addiction in America than we do today. The economy is in the tank. Contrary to the nonsense labor statistic, the unemployment rate is in the stratosphere. We've never had more unemployed Americans than we do today. It's estimated that perhaps as many as one in four American children living below the poverty line. And for American children of color, the numbers are far worse. This is a bleak, bleak situation. but there are Americans that are so focused on some woman who steps out of the shadows and says, Donald Trump said this or Donald Trump did that. Meanwhile, Bill Clinton is a serial rapist. Hillary Clinton has become his enabler, his excuser in chief, if you will. The Middle East is on fire. You look at Syria. You look at all of the violence of the Middle East, the emergence of ISIS. The Middle East is truly on fire. And Hillary Clinton, ladies and gentlemen, in my judgment, is the arsonist. As Secretary of State, her responsibility was to craft and then implement foreign policy, including foreign policy in the Middle East. Look where it got us. I keep hearing these people saying, well, you know, she has experience. She was a senator. She was Secretary of State. I could think of doctors who have years of experience and who have many lawsuits for malpractice. If ever there was somebody who should have been sued for malpractice, in my humble opinion, it's Hillary Clinton. So they talk about, well, she was a senator. Well, she was Secretary of State. And what did she do? Mishandled security material that probably cost people their lives already and endangers the safety of America and Americans. If that's the kind of experience you value, you need a checkup from the neck up. That's insanity. That's not experience. That's malfeasance. So if it's good to be malfeasant rather than to be new to the scene, if that's your judgment, you have faulty judgment. You are delusional. We are living in a very dangerous world, very dangerous era. It's the most dangerous world we've lived in since and perhaps even surpassing the Second World War. And on the list of problems grow. And Hillary, incredibly, who was part of this current administration, is promising to provide you with change. I mean, stop and think about how that's nuts. She was part of the administration. On her watch, we lost an ambassador and his and three of his security officers on her watch. And her answer when she went before Congress was to say, what difference does it make? They're dead. What difference does it make? Imagine someone is involved in a fatal car crash and the police come up to the driver and they say, what happened? And the driver looks the cop in the eye and says, what difference does it make? They're dead. Most reasonable police officers would probably slap handcuffs on that kind of an idiot. What do you mean they're dead? What difference does it make? Was it criminally negligent homicide? Was it intentional? Did the other person cause it to happen? Well, that's what difference it makes. It's the difference between a pure accident, nonfeasance, misfeasance, malfeasance, criminal conspiracy. There's a million possibilities. That's the difference it makes. But yet Hillary Clinton, and I can never forget it, what difference at this time, at this point in time, does it make flailing her arms around over her head? She was angry. She was angry. And the U.S. ambassador was killed at a U.S. embassy. She was the person running State Department. She was the one voicing indignation that she should be asked how this happened. What difference does it make? How dare you make me accountable? How dare you make me accountable? And then she started out, if you remember, explaining that she was using a private server. Oh, the emails were a mistake. Well, the server didn't wind up in her house by mistake. Okay? Then she said, well, I did this out of convenience so I wouldn't have to carry multiple devices. I only wanted to carry my BlackBerry. Then they found there were more devices. So she tried to explain away the additional devices, but everyone seemed to be ignoring the fact she said she had one device that she shouldn't have had for convenience that she was using overseas, which left her system amenable to hacking, vulnerable to hacking. Then there were more devices. I believe the last count was 13. And then she decided to test to see how strong they were, so she took hammers to them. And she did that business, most of it, after she was told that Congress wanted to see her emails. And then it would appear it was when she destroyed them. She thought irrevocably. Under the law, when you destroy evidence being demanded lawfully by an arm of the government, whether it's the legislative branch or the executive branch, or the judicial branch for that matter, if a subpoena is issued and you then destroy the documents that the subpoena requires, it's a criminal violation known as obstruction of justice. You are blocking an investigation by destroying the materials that you're supposed to surrender to competent, official, proper government authority. So she destroys them. Not one or two emails. What was the figure? 32,000 emails or 3,000? Whatever the number was, it was astronomical. The point is, this wasn't a, oops, I hit the delete key. This was, let's use a program that permanently removes those emails from my my server and my computer so they never appear again. Of course, she wasn't counting on WikiLeaks. She wasn't counting on this business with Anthony Weiner. And isn't that remarkable? Anthony Weiner, holy smoke, a.k.a. Carlos Danger. If you want to talk about a sexual deviant, if you want to talk about somebody who belongs to the Whack-A-Loon Club, it's Weiner. I mean, think what he did, sending out those emails, the texting, the photographs. I mean, it's as disgusting and wacky as it gets. And now her, you know, her web of deceit, her web of deception, her entanglements have snagged a true certifiable Whack-A-Loon. And he's so wacky, I don't know if you folks know this, but if you go to HBO, I believe it is, they're now doing, they're airing a documentary where cameras followed Weiner around throughout his ordeals with his wife, with his poor son. That kid is going to grow up embarrassed to have to explain to people how Weiner is his father. What a remarkable turn of events. A man who is a member of the United States Congress. He had so much going for him. He had Chuck Schumer as his mentor, or maybe de-mentor. And then he goes and does this. And first he said, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. Not me. Somebody hacked my computer and they're impersonating me. I mean, I guess his next excuse was that he was bipolar and this was his alter ego, perhaps, Carlos Danger. Carlos Danger, my gosh. So now the FBI today had to reopen the investigation. And when you look back at the way that the FBI has been influenced by this administration, the meeting between the Attorney General and Bill Clinton, how in the world does that happen prior to all this? While the Clinton Foundation is under investigation, while Hillary Clinton's email were under investigation. You know, I wrote about this for Front Page Magazine. I had a boss way back when who always used to say to us, his name was Frank Johnson. He was one of these real button-down guys. He used to wear shirts any color as long as they were starched white, you know, the kind of guy. Very low-key, held himself to a higher standard than the people who worked under his command. In other words, he possessed true leadership. And he always used to end meetings by saying, gentlemen, because back then I think we had two women agents in the whole office and we had a couple of hundred agents altogether. So, you know, 98% of us were men. And he would say, gentlemen. And if there was a woman in the office, he'd say, lady or ladies. And with a big smile, he said, never forget. It's not enough as federal agents to not engage in wrongdoing. You must never even give the illusion of doing wrong. So we have this clandestine, or supposed to be apparent clandestine meeting between Bill Clinton, former president, possible target of the investigation into the Clinton Foundation, meeting with Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, on her airplane, and she let him on board to discuss golf, perhaps, and their grandchildren. And if you believe that story, I've got a fence to sell you. I've got an email server, perhaps, to sell you. This is madness. You have Loretta Lynch, you know, who oversees the FBI, being told by the FBI there's nothing to see here. As a prosecutor, my job was never to tell the U.S. Attorney's Office whether or not to accept a case for prosecution. My job and the job of my agency was to provide evidence of a crime to the U.S. Attorney's Office, and then they decide whether or not to go forward with the prosecution. Who could ever forget James Comey, the head of the FBI, go through this litany of things that Hillary Clinton apparently did wrong with email, how she was reckless and so forth, and then saying, but there's no reason to prosecute. And then he went on and said, that's not to say that somebody in a similar situation would go without consequences. And that was the sentence that absolutely flipped me out, that someone else in a similar circumstance might well face sanctions, administrative or security sanctions. And what does that mean? The government has the right to strip a person forever and always of their ability to see classified materials. Military people, including a four-star general who's now facing jail sentence for mishandling of classified material. That's right. Other people would not go without punishment, but their name wasn't Hillary Clinton. Somehow that was separate. Somehow that was separate. And so, at the least, she probably, if she was anybody else, would have been permanently barred from ever again seeing anything that's considered classified. But not Hillary. Because, you know, this is this administration, the most transparent administration in history that thinks lead-lined bricks are the equivalent of glass. You want to talk about piercing the veil of secrecy? I can't remember a more secretive or untrustworthy or deceptive administration than the current administration. It blows my mind. And what blows my mind is how the Democratic Party, how almost all of the members of that party stand lockstep with Hillary and with Obama. You know, I have to tell you, I've testified before numerous congressional hearings, most of them prior to Obama coming into office, although 3 years ago I went before the Senate Judiciary Committee to testify about comprehensive reform and where immigration enforcement needs to go. But when I testified at the majority of the hearings before the House and Senate, President George W. Bush was the president of the United States. And with two exceptions, every hearing that I was called to, I was called to by the Republican Party, the Republican leadership, Congress, inviting me to testify as an expert witness where they knew and expected that I would criticize the administration's immigration policies. See, that's what leadership and real representation is about. That's what integrity is about. That you have the Congress knowing full well that it's a president from their party who they believe was making real bad judgment calls on immigration, telling me, we need you, Mike, to come down and make it clear to the American people and to our colleagues in the Congress that we're going the wrong way on the immigration issue, where it's national security, where it's public safety, a host of issues, mostly national security. Think of what kind of integrity that takes for the chairman of a committee and the chairman of a subcommittee to say to me, we need you to come testify. Jim Sensenbrenner, John Hostetler, there were others. Hostetler at the time chaired the House Immigration Subcommittee. Sensenbrenner was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Come testify, and we know that you're not happy with what the president wants. Here's an opportunity for you to voice your consternation. The Democrats march lockstep with Obama. No matter what Obama says, he's right. No matter what Obama does, he's right. If he oversteps his bounds with executive orders, the Democrat response is it's just the Republicans being mean and nasty and playing politics. When the judge rules that this DAPA program, the Deferred Action Program for the relatives of the Dreamers, was an overreach, the Democrats railed against the judge, railed against the Republicans. And full disclosure, I'm a lifelong registered Democrat. I've always voted as an independent because I hate both parties. But when was the last time you heard a Democrat stand up and say, this is nuts, it's not acceptable? The Republicans did it all the time with George W. Bush in the White House when they disagreed on immigration. I'm telling you this from firsthand experience. I'm telling you this because I had meetings with the leadership in the House numerous times. Numerous contacts with the councils over there as well. And I respected them so much for it. I said, this is what America is about. John F. Kennedy did a speech shortly after the Bay of Pigs talking about how reporters have an obligation to tell the truth And when they anger people because they did tell the truth, they should be respected for doing it. Because as Kennedy put it, we live in an open, not a closed society. And in talking about a closed society, he was referencing communism. What a brilliant speech. How nostalgic that made me for the old days when I went to sleep at night confident that the occupant of the Oval Office, whether I agreed or disagreed with him on issue by issue, was going to put America and American interests first. Didn't always agree, but you didn't worry. We are now in the middle of a war. The war has been going on for decades. You know, the first bombing of the Trade Center in 93, but prior to that, you had the downing over Lockerbie, Scotland, of the Pan Am airplane. You had the killing of Rabbi Meir Kahane. You had a yeshiva, a van filled with yeshiva kids shot up on the Brooklyn Bridge. Abi Halberstam was killed. And these were all attacks on Jews, attacks on the United States by men from the Middle East who have a hatred for America and for people who are not subscribing to their brand of Islam. These are radical Islamist terrorists, period. And for them, the solution to those who disagree is death. You convert or you die, you see. That's radical Islam operating within our borders. And then we hear this nonsense, well, we're fighting them over there, so we don't have to fight them here. Baloney. Baloney. That's a lot of BS. We are fighting them here. Those kids in that van were killed on the Brooklyn Bridge. Rabbi Meir Kahane was killed in Manhattan. The World Trade Center was bombed, and it was in lower Manhattan. 9/11 played out in Manhattan and in Pennsylvania and in Virginia across the Potomac from Washington at the Pentagon. And then we've had the subsequent attacks at San Bernardino and Boston, and the list goes on. Radical Islamist terrorists killing Americans at home, and we're being told, we're fighting them there, so we don't have to fight them here. Really? And then you have people in government who declare that aliens who come to the United States and commit acts of terror are homegrown because they became citizens. They became citizens because of the ineptitude of citizenship and immigration services. That's how they became citizens. They're not homegrown. Faisal Shahzad, often portrayed in the media as the homegrown terrorist, the Times Square bomber, 1910, if you folks remember, 2010 rather, if you remember that bombing. Thankfully, the bomb didn't kill anybody, but Faisal Shahzad came here at the age of 20 on a visa from Pakistan, student visa, acquires citizenship, and about 13 months after becoming a citizen, carries out a deadly attack, and at sentencing, and that cretin was sentenced to life without parole, he will live his last day in confinement, thank God. She said, you just took an oath. We just made you an American. He said, it was a false oath. I hate America. I hate your freedom. Sharia gives me all the freedom I want. What kind of a background investigation did we do? We're supposed to do a background. Well, according to Doris Meisner, who was the commissioner of immigration under Bill Clinton, in order to move more applications for citizenship through the bureaucratic hopper, she decided unilaterally, hey, we'll dispense with interviews. We don't even need background investigations. There's no time for investigations. We don't need no stinking investigations. We don't even need interviews. So they started zipping those applications through in a program known as CUSA, Citizenship USA. 1.2 million applications run through the system. Hillary Clinton comes up there now, wife of Bill, who gave us CUSA, Citizenship USA, where the employees of immigration, INS, was so angry that they went to the Inspector General's office, Internal Affairs, and said, this is nuts. We're approving applications, and these people don't even have their fingerprints back. It turned out that thousands of citizens who were naturalized under the Clinton supposed leadership, use that expression with a big grain of salt, leadership, it turned out they had criminal histories, people who should have been deported. And then recently, there was a new Inspector General report about the Obama administration where over 800 aliens were granted U.S. citizenship. And what's remarkable is they were citizens of countries that sponsored terrorism, and they were under outstanding orders of removal, orders of deportation. So not only were they here illegally, but they'd been ordered out of the country, and we gave them citizenship. And now Hillary Clinton wants to take that machinery, that bureaucrat leviathan, that is overworked, understaffed, totally inept and incompetent. It's crushing under the workload. She wants a 500% plus increase in the number of Syrian refugees that she would authorized to remain in the United States and as refugees. Now, I just wrote an article, the front page, and it was called Hillary and Weaponized Immigration. And what you may not know, and I was tipped off about this by my friend who was the former Democrat counsel on the Immigration Subcommittee, a guy by the name of Nolan Rappaport. We're good friends. We work together closely. Nolan and I, we're on the same page on most of the issues. He's a brilliant legal scholar. And he said, Mike, do you realize that the President of the United States has the ultimate and total unilateral authority to admit as many refugees as he or she wants? And he said, so that means that if Hillary Clinton becomes the president and she wants to let in every Syrian refugee in the universe, there's nothing to stop her. The law simply says that the president shall consult with the Congress, you know, the House and Senate Judiciary Committees, that the aliens in question must be vetted overseas. And then there's a consultation between the administration and key members of the House and Senate Judiciary Committees. And then the president gets to decide on what the actual number is. So if there's an emergency circumstance, right, the crisis, as we saw the surge of the unaccompanied minors across the southwest border, we've got a crisis. The president could say, we've got a crisis in Europe. We're helping our European partners. And in theory, Hillary Clinton could call up Merkel in Germany and say, you know, you've got a big problem and your citizens are angry that your women are being raped and that they have no-go zones that are starting to crop up in Germany. And there's real issues about terrorism. And Great Britain just voted for Brexit, the exit of Britain from the European Union. I'll help you out because I'm your friend. Send me all of your refugees, every last one of them. As long as they've been vetted, I'll take them. We know that they can't be vetted. This is a fantasy. How do we know that these refugees can't be vetted? James Comey made it clear. And we heard from John Brennan, the head of the CIA, at a congressional hearing, where he said, listen, ISIS is embedding terrorists in the refugee flows. James Comey said we can't vet these people because there's no place to look at the records. Basically, there's nobody on the ground on Syria who can get near those records. We know that the terrorists overran office buildings in Syria, got hold of blank passports and other identity documents and the printing machinery used to produce authentic passports, authentic identity documents. And they have records so they know if names are real and if somebody was, you know, has since died, if they've got the death certificates and the birth certificates. So it would be easy for them, ISIS, to create legitimate passports and issue it to somebody that it doesn't really relate to so that terrorists could gain access to the United States or countries in Western Europe. Now, we heard this from James Comey. We've seen news reports about the seizure of the printing materials by ISIS in the media as well. This is potentially catastrophic. And then you come to find out, according to a report that was done, for Congress, an official government report, that the president has the ultimate last word. No matter what Congress wants, the next president could thumb his or her nose at the Congress and say, well, we vetted them, we're admitting them, and you can't even go to court to block it. What's the grounds for blocking it? They've been vetted. I'm the president. I want that number here. Hillary could get elected and say, the hell with 500%. I want 1,000%. I want 5,000%. The sky is the limit. If that isn't disconcerting, check for a pulse. So that's a big issue. And we are in the midst of an election. Indeed, in the midst. They estimated on Fox News today that perhaps as many as 20 million votes have already been cast. But understand, if you are worried about Syrian refugees, we wind up with a President Hillary Clinton. There is no way to rein in what she wants to do. You can't look at this like the Dreamers and say, well, we'll take her to court. Because if you look at the law, folks, she has total, complete, and undeniable authority to make the actual decision as to what number we will admit. and I want to remind you to put it in context, that on September 11th, 2001, 19 young men barely out of their teens, with not much in the way of really formal education, took over 4 airplanes with passengers on board, turned them into de facto cruise missiles, and slaughtered well over 3,000 people. And the reason I say well over is because of how many people have become ill and died or are dying because of their exposure to the toxins, the asbestos, and other poisons that were spewed into the atmosphere when the World Trade Center disintegrated. The Zadruga bill is costing America billions of dollars, but what's more disturbing to me than the billions of dollars are the lives ruined, the people who were killed and the people who are dying and the people who are ill. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And we keep seeing instance after instance where you have people within the Somali community traveling to the Middle East to join ISIS, to join other terrorist organizations. And then you've got Hillary saying she's going to legalize everybody who's here. And this is the segue into this other article that I wrote for Front Page Magazine back on October 24th was when they published it. And the title of my article here is Hillary versus the Education of American Children, What Clinton's Proposed Amnesty for Illegal Aliens Would Really Do. Now, here's something no one's talking about. Now, isn't that remarkable? How unusual is that? An aspect of the immigration crisis not being properly covered by the mainstream media, and I don't care what station you want to point your finger at. You know, it's the spin the wheel, and it's every station. And you tell me if you've ever heard this before. What we're not being told is that if we legalize the population, and let's say it's 30 million, totally reasonable, maybe 40 million. Reagan told us 1 million would come out of the shadows. We wound up with almost 4 million. Now they're telling us 11 million. And by the way, here's something cute too. The Congressional Budget Office did a study about the impact of illegal immigration on America back in 2007, 9 years ago. 9 years ago. The CBO, Congressional Budget Office, said that there were 12 million illegal aliens present in the United States 9 years ago. We've seen all the surges, right, on the Southwest. We've also seen those reports that at least 500,000 aliens were illegally admitted to the United States violated the terms of admission. 9 years ago. How many more millions have we seen come into the country since then? And then we get this nonsense. Well, the Border Patrol only stops half of the illegals that run the border, and the administration is claiming 80%, and they have all these widget counters go down to the border, and they came up with this number as to how many illegal aliens are getting away. More nonsense. They weren't along the entire border. They go to high traffic areas, whatever the hell that means, and we estimate how many are getting away. Well, if you can count them, you can arrest them. I've never heard of anything so stupid. And no one's even asking, by the way, when they do catch them, what do they do with them? Yeah, they send them on their merry way and they say, show up at a hearing. And the likelihood that they're going to show up is between slim and none, and slim just left the building. So we're worrying about how many angels dance on the head of a pin. And no one's even asking the obvious question. Well, those who do get arrested, are they ever removed? Probably not. You've got a president who's released tens of thousands of criminal aliens from detention when they could have been and should have been deported from the United States. And then they go on to commit more crimes. There have been hearings about that. I've written about it. I've talked about it on my program. In April this year, the House Immigration Subcommittee, chaired by Trey Gowdy, talked about how I think the number that Lamar Smith at that hearing divulged was over 140 more people lost their lives to these aliens who were released from prison. If they hadn't been released, 140 odd people would still be with us today. And those are the murders and the homicides and the instances of manslaughter we know about. How many don't we know who did it? There's a cost. This is not victimless. This is not minor. This is not insignificant. This isn't about people mowing lawns. It's about people mowing down Americans and lawful immigrants and members of the ethnic immigrant communities. Mowing lawns my backside. So here is the newest thing that nobody's talking about. And when I tell you this, you're going to be very upset. And I have a request. If my program, if the material that I write fires you up, remember about it on election day when you go vote. But I also am asking you to please, please, please share this information with everyone you can, especially the people who disagree with you. This nonsense that we should not have discussions about politics and religion and polite conversation is bunk. Nonsense. Religion, I agree. Whether or not a person has a relationship with God, what that relationship is, under the banner of what religion, I don't give a flying you-know-who. But goodness, folks, if we don't talk about government and corruption, if we don't talk about where we are and where we need to be and what road we're headed down, and it's the road to hell right now, then we're not going to change the dynamics and we're not going to change the trajectory of our country. The First Amendment talks about freedom of press and freedom of speech. That's right, but it talks about something else as well. The right for peaceable assemblage and the right to seek redress of grievances. And those two last items always get left out. Freedom of the right to seek redress of grievances and the right for peaceable assemblage. The reason the Founding Fathers talked about peaceable assemblage was because they were basically saying, have those debates, have the arguments, have the discourse. Just leave guns, clubs, and knives out of the conversation. You cannot have a democracy, folks, without open discussion, without dissension, without debate, without argument. Democracy is not neat, it's not clean, and it's not pretty. It's not supposed to be. We have a strong enough stomach. We're adults. Our children's future and the future of our grandchildren and their children hang in the balance. So speaking about kids and thinking about the way Hillary is always talking glowingly, oh, it's all about the children. Fasten your seatbelt and put the tray in the upright and stored position. Every alien that Hillary Clinton is determined to provide lawful status to, every illegal alien that she would give citizenship to, would on the day that that person is granted lawful status as an immigrant, would have the immediate right, and she's made it clear she's about reuniting families, right? Would have the immediate, absolute, unchallengeable right to bring in each and every single one of every one of their minor children, period, overnight, period, no discussion, instead of 11 or 12 million. And Saldana, the head of ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, when she testified before Congress, said she thought maybe it was 15 million. We have no idea. But let's say it's 30 million, and let's say one in three of those legalized aliens has kids back home. Third world country families tend to have many, many, many children. Children, 7-8 kids per family is not an unusual situation in those countries. So if one in three legalized aliens has kids back home, and let's be an optimist and say that they have an average of 3 minor children each, those who do have kids, you're looking at 30 million children being admitted into America and immediately being enrolled in public schools from coast to coast and border to border. Has that sunk in? I'm going to repeat it. There was a massive legalization program. This is what Hillary Clinton wants for America. It is likely that the number of children that would legally then become entitled to enter the United States would exceed the number of aliens who would be granted lawful status under her amnesty program overnight. There'd be no ability to really screen so many millions of kids. What this also means is you have to be concerned about the potential for diseases coming into the United States. We are currently suffering from exotic tropical diseases we've never seen in America. And we're seeing a resurgence of diseases that we thought we had vanquished decades ago. We also know, if you look at that hearing that I had started talking about that Trey Gowdy held back in April of this year, A sheriff from Maryland testified before that hearing, and he talked about how, as sheriff of a town in Maryland, the border state of Maryland, we have 50 border states, let's never forget that, over 60%, 60%, of the time that his people are called because of a disturbance in an intermediate or a public school, because of a child starting a fight, attacking someone, including teachers and so forth, over 60%, over 60% of the time, the child behind the act of violence is from Central America and entered the United States under the aegis of this unaccompanied minors program that we're seeing along the southwest border. So we are importing gang members in New York, out on Long Island. There's a very big issue in Suffolk County right now, and I believe Nassau County as well, of gang members killing children. And who are they killing? Latinos. And who's doing the killing? Latinos. And it's not just within the Latino community, by the way. As an immigration agent, I've arrested criminals from Russia, from Asia, from the Caribbean, from Europe, from the Middle East, from Africa, and yes, from Latin America and from Canada, from New Zealand and Australia. And I'll tell you why that happens. Human nature is human nature is human nature. Every race, every religion, every ethnic group, every nationality possess what I call the good, the bad, and the ugly. Nobody, no ethnic group has cornered the market on bad guys or cornered the market on smart people or cornered the market on buffoons. Human beings are human beings are human beings. But understand what we are talking about. The potential that our schools from coast to coast and border to border under Hillary Clinton would be inundated by millions, perhaps tens of millions of children who would immediately be enrolled in schools. It's problematic about whether or not they would even be family members. I would strongly urge the government, but of course Hillary doesn't care. This isn't about doing it in an orderly, legal fashion. This is about an orchestrated invasion of America. Make no mistake, there is no other way that I can describe what we're witnessing or what she and her partner are promising. But in France, because there were so many lies told about familial relationships, they resorted to DNA testing to verify the familial relationship. But even if that all pans out, you're looking at a massive influx of millions upon millions of foreign kids who would immediately be enrolled in schools. And again, going back to the Congressional Budget Office, kids who cannot speak English cost 20 to 40% more to educate over their peers who can speak and read and write English. Does anybody out there have any idea what this would do to the educational system of just about every school district, coast to coast and border to border? This is like a nuke going off. It would detonate and the schools would be finished. There is a shortage of good teachers now. There's a shortage of classroom space now. There is a shortage of money, school supplies now. There are many teachers who are so dedicated that they buy school supplies out of their meager paychecks. And we've got to stop vilifying every teacher in America. That's another common refrain. Oh, the school system does a crappy job of teaching kids. The teachers are incompetent. I was the Parents Association president of my daughter's public school way back when. And there were some teachers who really should have found a different way to try to make a buck because these people had no business in front of a classroom. And I minored in education. My degree was communications, arts, and sciences. Or as I prefer to say, I have a BA and BS. But I started out as a science major, as an engineering major to begin with, and things don't always go as we plan. Although my oldest son's an engineer, my youngest son's studying engineering, very proud of him. But I did minor in education, and we had a lot of good teachers in that school. But it's not easy to be a teacher in an environment where the parents refuse to do their part. Yeah, I dropped my kid off at school, let the school educate my child. Well, wait a minute, why don't you contribute to that effort? You're a parent. You're supposed to raise the child. What do you think raising includes? So, you know, we've got real issues. Part of why grades keep on faltering in America And then the nitwits get up there on the evening news and say, well, American schools aren't doing so hot. How many of the kids that can't do well in school can't speak English and are foreign students? Nobody ever talks about that particular subset. There was an article that just came out that according to the Census Bureau, right now, folks, right now, today, over 65 million residents of the United States go home and don't speak English at home. Whether they're bilingual or don't even know how to speak English, God only knows. But this country has never been more balkanized or never more divided. 65 million residents of these United States of America speak other than English at home. How in the world does a country remain unified with this lunacy being foisted upon us by politicians who should be sent off to the gray bar inn, or at the very least voted out of office, because sure as hell they're not representing the average American? You wonder why Trump's voice resonates? Do you really wonder? This is such a betrayal on so many levels. Immigration is the key, and this is not about xenophobia. And Americans need to grow a spine and stand up to that nonsense about xenophobia. It's not xenophobic to look through the peephole of your door before letting a stranger into your home. It's common sense. We know that criminals and terrorists want to come to America to ply their trades. We know there are many foreign workers who want to come here and work. And when they do that, they generally take the jobs that should go to Americans. And by being here, they're driving down the wages of those people who are already working in those industries. The middle class of the United States is largely a product of good immigration policies and enforcement programs. Prior to the Second World War, the Labor Department ran immigration. The idea was to make damn sure that Americans would not compete with foreign workers. Now, why is that important? Because when a worker comes to the United States from a third world country, guess what they bring with them from the third world? You give up? Expectations of what reasonable wages and reasonable working conditions are. Well, for most people who live and work in third world countries, you know, a couple of dollars a day and a bowl of almost warm rice is considered a standard paycheck. Working conditions? Ha! In China, you have workers in factories producing all this wonderful electronic stuff you like to buy. Because they live in the factory with their kids. Think about that environment. But some of these people have taken to jumping out the window to commit suicide. And China, of course, is an innovative country, very innovative country. They like to hack our computers. They're building an artificial island in the South China Sea. They warn America that if we get too close to the island, they will fire on us. They're our allies, right? How stupid are we? So China, this innovative powerhouse, because people were jumping, guess how they solved the problem of employees trying to end it all by leaping out of windows? If you don't know, you're going to be amazed. They are erecting and have erected nets, basically, to catch the bodies. And see, if they were really innovative, and I said this to some friends and to my wife the other day, if they were really innovative in China, they would get rid of those nets and replace them with trampolines. So when someone jumps out the window, they hit the trampoline, and boing, they bounce back through the window, and they're back where they started so they can finish their day at work. This is the lunacy that we expect Americans to compete with. We're making Americans compete with the third world. And by doing so, we are turning America into a third world country. China's economy grew by 7% last year, and India's economy grew by 8%. And Trump has been hammering the issue. The part of why India has been doing so well, ladies and gentlemen, is because they get the greatest amount of money wired home by their workers, not just in the United States, but across the planet. So last year, if my memory serves me correctly, India got an infusion of over $70 billion dollars in money wired home. It was a shot in the arm for their economy, and it helped them tremendously. Last year, we lost hundreds of billions of dollars in remittances, money lost to our economy. So you're not only losing that money, but you're losing the multiplier effect. And under the idea of the multiplier effect, every dollar circulating in the economy generates three more. So do the math, and we've lost at least $200 or $300 billion a year because of the remittances, and then we kick in with the multiplier effect. And what does this tell you? The annual growth in the U.S. national debt would be reversed if the remittance flow would be stopped. That's not about to happen. And I could certainly assure you it's not about to happen under a President Clinton who wants to take down the borders, which is what she told the bankers. She dreams of a world with no borders. Doris Meisner, Bill Clinton's commissioner, said the same sort of thing when she was the immigration commissioner. This isn't isolated, and it's not a coincidence. This is about the removal of America's borders, borders that are our first and last line of defense. The 9/11 Commission made it clear that border security needed to be a component of a strategy of national security and to protect America and Americans from the threat of terrorism. But don't bother Hillary Clinton with those details, because Hillary Clinton has an agenda. Her agenda is open borders and the free flow of goods and workers around the world. And then she says, well, I want wage equality and I want to raise minimum wage. Well, that's great. 10 an hour works out to 21,000 a year. Wage equality, what does that make you equal to? It's a bait and switch tactic. See, what Hillary Clinton isn't striving for is the raising of a minimum wage alone, because that probably would be more than most people earn on minimum wage. But it's also about the establishment, for all intents and purposes, of a standard wage. This is so treacherous. Flooding America with refugees who can't be vetted, legalizing millions of people who snuck in so they can't be vetted and their presence isn't even known to our government. No resources to look for the aliens who would not come out of the shadows because they know that their fingerprints are on file and they're fugitives, criminals, terrorists. See, it's lie after lie. We can't deport them all, so we may as well give them lawful status. We hear that from both parties. No. You arrest as many as you can, and you tell people if we find you, there are consequences. We do it with every other area of law where immigration is concerned. Isn't that a remarkable except? Please go to my website. Check out my two articles from this past week, Hillary versus the Education of American Children, and my other article, Hillary and Weaponized Immigration, How International Terrorists Would Turn Clinton's, quote, compassionate immigration proposals against us. It's about understanding the issues, and it's about sharing this information with as many folks as you can. You really need to be involved. The election is coming. The clock is ticking. We stand at crossroads. And I always like to make the point that democracy is not a spectator sport. It's for all these reasons that you need to be involved. You need to engage your neighbors in conversation. And if you're not eager to become involved in politics, but you're a parent, I want you to know that good parenting requires involvement in politics, because it involves the future of our country. And as a consequence, it involves the future of our children and their children. That's the only thing that stands between us and the lunacy of politicians who need to be sent packing. So I thank you for joining me. I look forward, as always, to joining you again next week, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour. I hope you have a great weekend, but please, again, I remind you, democracy is not a spectator sport. Please get involved, folks. Make certain that America winds up with the kind of leaders that we can be proud of, and the leaders who will do that which is essential for all of us. See you next week. Good night.